Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Rachel Berkovitz coming to you from Jerusalem. This is Unit 12 of 20 when we're learning all the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We are at the beginning of the third chapter, and last time we finally reached the time period of what we think might be Rosh Hashanah itself, the Rosh Hashanah on the first day of Tishrei, because Mishnah Bet spoke about all the shofarot being eligible. Although what was interesting about the Mishnah is it didn't exactly tell us eligible for what. What type of usage? When would you use the shofar? We know we use it on Rosh Hashanah. And what's interesting is that Mishnah Gimel, Dalet, and Hey, 4, 5, and 6, are going to tell us in each one three different times when the shofar is used. We're going to find out that shofar is used on Rosh Hashanah, but it's also used on Tanit, on fast days, and I'm going to explain a bit more about that when we get there. And it's used on the Yovel, on the Jubilee, and I'll explain a little bit more about that in a second. So we're going to find out that there are actually three different times throughout a year in which the shofar can be used. And each one of these Mishnayot is going to explain something about how what type of shofar is used, how it's used, what happens there. So that's interesting that once again, when we're talking about the shofar of Rosh Hashanah or about Rosh Hashanah itself, it doesn't always stand on its own. It's in comparison to other things. And I think that possibly by juxtaposing it or comparing it to or saying what's similar to these other cases, and we maybe can understand how the shofar is used in those other cases, it will help us unpack what the purpose of the shofar is on Rosh Hashanah itself. Okay. Now, what's interesting is in these three Mishnayot, which we'll read in a second, the one about Ta'anit, although it mentions there is a shofar, it actually says that the main thing that happens on the Ta'anit is a different type of blowing, is a different instrument that makes a sound, and that's the Chatzotzra. That is a human-made horn made by humans out of metal, out of silver. And I raise the fact that the Mishnah is going to mention this as interesting because I think behind the scenes here is something going on very, very interesting. I said last time that if you look in the Torah itself, there are two times where the Torah talks about the day that we call Rosh Hashanah. Now, first of all, neither place in the Torah does it mention that it is the Rosh Hashanah. In fact, the opposite, because the Torah uses Nisan as the first month. It refers to it as happening on the first day of the seventh month. And in Sefer Vayikra, chapter 23, it says on verse 24, it says, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, it shall be for you, Yelechem Shabbaton Zichron Trua Mikra Kodesh. A day of resting, a remembrance of blasts, a holy day." Okay, and so we have the word trua, a blast. We know that a horn, like a blast, comes from some type of horn. And in Sefer Bamidbar, in Numbers chapter 29, at the beginning of the chapter, similar thing. It says on the seventh month, or the first day of the month, right, it's going to be a holy day for you, Mikra Kodesh, Yelechem, Kol Melechet Avodah Lo Tasu, Yom Trua Yelechem, a day of blasting will be for you. So this word Trua, which is a sound that we are only going to hear in the next chapter of the Mishnah, how do I make that sound? Presumably I make it by blowing something. And then the question is, what am I blowing to get this sound? So the Torah doesn't tell me what I blow to get this sound. In the Torah itself, there are actually two models of what makes this sound trua. And the first one is a chatzotra, is a human-made instrument, a metal instrument out of silver. And that's in Numbers 10. And it goes through where it says, God says to Moshe, make me two trumpets of silver, of beaten work, you shall make them. And then it discusses a number of things. It calls the congregation together, calls the nation together. And when they're traveling in the desert or moving camps, it lets them know how they should move. And there are different types of sounds, like a trua is sounded. And you do different things when you hear the sounds. It also blow it when you go to war, The Chatzitra is also linked to war, as we saw in the chapter, in the Mishnah before. When things oppress you, when your adversaries oppress you, and somehow the Trua is going to make you remembered before God, and we have this idea of Zichron here. You also do it when you want God to save you from your enemies, and you do it on your days of gladness in the appointed seasons, Moedchem, right? You can do it, and it says specifically you blow it on the new moons, and you blow it with certain offerings that you do, and all this is going to be a zichron to you. So in fact, it's interesting. It sounds like the Chatzotra might be a good candidate for what one should blow on Rosh Hashanah, but the rabbis don't go that way. They go with the other candidate written in the Torah of when the what makes the sound Tura is the shofar. So the shofar is mentioned, but it's not mentioned with Rosh Hashanah. In Sefer Vayikra, chapter 25, verse 8, it's mentioned with the Jubilee. So the Jubilee is that we have a cycle with the land where we count 6 years, and then the seventh year is a Shemitah year where the land lies fallow, and certain laws about not owning the vegetables and not working the land and the produce, etc., apply. And then we have like a bigger magnified Shemitah is that at the end of 49 years of a 7 times 7 cycle, on the 50th year is this Jubilee year. And what's really interesting to me about the word Yovel, which means Jubilee, is the word Yovel we're going to see here, as we saw in the verse that was quoted in Mishnah Bet, the word Yovel also means ram's horn. And so the word itself for the Jubilee gets taken from the word for a horn. And I don't fully get etymologically why that is, or if it's because the Jubilee we're going to see is going to be proclaimed by this blast of a horn. Although in the verses about proclaiming the Jubilee, it's called the shofar there, and it isn't referred to the horn as a yovel itself. It refers to the year as the yovel. So if anyone knows anything about etymology, write to me of what the play on these words is that I don't fully understand. But anyway, in this pinnacle year, it says on verse number 9, Hevarta shofar tura b'chodesh ha-shvi'i b'asor l'chodesh b'yom ha-kiburim taviru shofar b'chol artzachem. You shall proclaim with the shofar trua in the seventh month, but this isn't on Rosh Hashanah, it's on the 10th of the month. Which, what day is that? That's Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and you should sound the shofar throughout your land. And that happens on the Yovel year. The rabbis make a drasha to understand, they link more, because the verse said both, it said both on the 10th day of the seventh month, and it also said on Yom Kippur, and those are both, you don't need both of those statements to get, those are the same thing. It made a drasha to say that anything that happens, any type of blowing that happens in the seventh month should be done with a shofar. But I think it's something deeper than that, the link between shofar and yovel, and we're going to see that in our Mishnayot in a second as well. What's interesting is what happens on the yovel, what happens on this Jubilee year. What does the shofar do? And it says that you are going to proclaim with the shofar, right? What do you proclaim? You're going to proclaim ukaratim dror ba'aretz. You proclaim freedom throughout the land. What does it mean to proclaim freedom throughout the land? It's that all land reverts back to its original owners. All debts are forgone. Anything that sort of like left human beings subjugated to other human beings without money, without land, that is, it's a fresh new start. If we're talking about new renewal, right? The new moon is a renewal, is a chadash. The Jubilee is a real renewal in rejuvenating life of individual human beings and their connection to the land and their sort of own autonomy. And that is what the shofar blast proclaims on the Jubilee, which is a very different proclaiming than proclaiming war or something like that. And we need to think about that. Okay, so these are the two models, the Chatzotra and the shofar, that exist in the Torah for what makes this Trua sound. So let's now see what our Mishnah does. So we've already heard the word Yovel in Mishnah Bet, but it was referring to the ram's horn and not to the Jubilee. In the fifth Mishnah, we're going to hear the word Yovel again, and it's going to refer to the Jubilee. But let's start with Mishnah 3. Mishnah 3 and Mishnah 4 clearly are parallels to the other. In fact, they're inverse opposites of each other in some ways, but their structure is exactly the same. And so it says in Mishnah 3, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, the shofar of the new year, What kind of shofar is it? Shel Ya'el Pashut. It's of a Ya'el. Now, if I understand this correctly, I'm not big on animals. A Ya'el is an ibex, is a mountain goat. And the shofar itself is Pashut. It's simple. It's straight. It's not so curved, right? I tried to look at pictures of ibexes. The female ibex has a much shorter, straighter horn. The male ibex, it a little bit curves. I'm saying this curves because in a second we're going to compare it to the ram's horn, which is much more curved. So we'll see. But it's of an ibex that's somewhat straight. Upiv mitzupe zahav, and its opening its mouth is covered in gold. Now this might surprise you because you've probably been to the synagogue and seen a lot of shofars and you've never seen any gold on them. And that is because this is already the first hint that what's happening in this Mishnah isn't what you're used to seeing on synagogue. What's happening in this Mishnah is a description of the ritual that happens in the temple. The ritual that happens in the temple. And it continues. Ushtei chatzatrot mitzidan. And two horns, silver trumpets, are on either side. So now we're finding out that on Rosh Hashanah, we have both the shofar and the silver trumpet. The shofar is a shofar of an ibex, a simple ibex covered in gold. There's a trumpet on either side that's made out of silver. And then it says, shofar ma'arich v'chotzotrot mekatzrot. The shofar is long, and the sound and the blast from the trumpet, from the silver trumpet, is short. Commentators understand that is that they actually start out blowing at the same time. They're blowing at the same time, but the trumpet dies out, and then at the end, you only hear the sound of the shofar. And then the Mishnah explains why. Why is that? Why do I like let the blast of the shofar be longer? Shemitzvat hayom, or in the manuscripts, it says shebimitzvat hayom b'shofar, because the mitzvah of the day, the commandment of the day, is with a shofar. Right? I mean, so now this is referring to this thing. It knows that the commandment of the day is to create a trua sound. Right? The Torah said the word trua. It doesn't use either the word tekiah or the word trua here. It doesn't use either of those sounds, but the Torah said it, create a blasting sound. It gives us two instruments to create the blasting sound, but one of those instruments is in the middle. That's the shofar. So middle seems like it's more important. It has a special adornment showing importance of zahav, although we're going to see that it will also be adorned in the next one. And it blasts longer. Because it's the central one, the mitzvah of the day is with the shofar. And that's Mishnah Gimel. And it appears to be that our first description specific to Rosh Hashanah is a description that's happening in the temple, which is interesting. And the interplay between temple and non-temple is definitely been a theme. We saw it in chapter one where they said there were different practices when the temple was standing and not. It's going to be a theme we see in chapter four. And here too with the shofar, you might not have ever thought about the shofar in the temple. We find out something about the temple ritual. And it seems a bit more formalized, a bit more structured, right, than maybe what you're used to. And it's definitely like a processional or a performance. I want to remind you that if it's happening in the temple, it hasn't discussed who blows yet. And that's going to be a theme in our chapter at the end. But I assume it's the Kohanim that are blowing. It's priests that are blowing and not your lay person that is blowing. So what's also interesting about this day in the temple is that I want to remind you that the sanctification of the new moon happened in the temple as well. And so our first right, because that's where the court was sitting when the temple was standing. So our first mention of Rosh Hashanah and the blowing of the shofar is linked to the space, right? So the court would sanctify and go mikudash, mikudash. And then right there in the temple, there'd be some other formal ritual of blowing. Okay, that is Mishnah 3. Mishnah 4. Bata'anit. B'shel zecharim kfufim. The blowing that happens on a ta'anit, on a fast day, and now you're like a little bit confused. Wait a second, were we talking about fast days? And should this Mishnah really be here? We have an entire tractate that talks about, is called Masachet Ta'anit, Tractate Ta'anit, a tractate about the fast days. And so on the one hand, you might think it should not be here. It should be in Ta'anit, but you'll see that the structure is going to be exactly the same as the structure about the shofar. And it's clear that it wants to come to teach us something also about shofar. So what are the fasts that we're talking about? We're talking about fasts that that the community takes upon itself when there is no rain, when there is a drought, right? And we talked about in the first chapter how the on Sukkot, the world is judged for rain. And just after Sukkot, right, the Mishnah in Tanit says, in the beginning of the first chapter of Tanit, it says, there's a machloket, the Tanakhama, the first view says that on the third of Cheshvan, we start asking for rain. And Rabbi Gamliel says, no, on the seventh of Cheshvan, because he wants to give 2 weeks for the pilgrimage. People came on pilgrimage from Babylonia. We want to give them 2 weeks to go home, to get home before the rain starts, because if they get caught in the rain, they're not going to want to come, and it's going to be difficult for them. So we give them 2 weeks to get home, and then now is the rainy season. We want it to rain because we want our crops to grow, right? That's why the world was judged about rain, because we need that rain so we can get to Pesach time in the spring and have our crops grow strong, right? So this is all the background we saw in the first chapter, right? So we start praying for rain at the beginning of Cheshvan. Right? Sukkot was in the end of Tishrei. And the Mishnah says if we reach the 17th of Cheshvan, if we reach the 17th of Cheshvan and rain hasn't fallen, we start doing communal fasts. We start giving communal fasts and they get progressively more serious. It starts with individuals. Then if by Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the beginning of the next month, to about 2 weeks later, nothing's happened, no rain, then the Beit Din, then the court, another job of the court, decrees 3 different fasts on the community. And the Mishnah there describes who fasts and how you fast. And they get progressively more and more and more serious if no rain is coming. And so if we had one of these communal fasts happening at the time when the temple, this is still ritual in the temple, this is one of the things that would accompany it. So if you look in Mishnah Ta'anit, right? If you look there in the second chapter, it describes the Kohanim doing blasts. And it describes it as, it says here, Mishnah Tani, chapter 2, Mishnah 5, Tiku HaKohanim Tiku, right? Sound the blast, priest, sound the blast. And then they say like a sort of like a tefillah, he who answered Abraham on Har Moriah, Mount Moriah, he shall answer you and hear the voice of your cry on this day. Like Mishanat Avram Avinu Bahara Moriah, Hu Yanetchem Yishma B'Kol Tzachkechem Hayom Hazeh, and then it says Hiriu Bnei Aharon Hiriu, blast the sons of Aharon, blast, and then it says Mishanat Avotim Al Yam Suf Hu Yanetchem Yishma B'Kol Tzachkechem, who answered your father on the Sea of Reeds, he should answer and hear your voice and hear your cry on this day. And so it seems clear. There, we're going to see that the blasting is intrinsically linked with tefillah, which is interesting because we're going to mention brachot in a second. It's going to be in the fourth chapter. We're going to see that the shofar is linked with tefillah. And actually, the tefillah that's done on Ta'anit is going to have a similarity to our tefillah on Rosh Hashanah because it's going to also have a section called shofarot and called zichronot that we're going to hear about in the fourth chapter. Although here in our Mishnah here, it does not make the connection between the Ta'anit and tefillah. In fact, it's only going to be in Mishnah 5, we're going to make the connection to the Yovel that the brachot are the same, that the jubilee are the same. But anyways, this is the example of what the Ta'anit is. I described for you the Ta'anit so you can understand what those blasts are. Those blasts seem to be a calling out in pain and time of need. And we're really, when we're dependent on the God and we're worried that we're being punished, that we're not getting rain, right? We knew we've been judged and we're not getting rain. And so what type of shofar is used then? Ta'anit, b'shel zacharim kufim. On Ta'anit, it's with males, those of males that are kafuf, that are bent down, that are curved, right? And definitely the image of something being curved as opposed to something being straight is a very different image of the experience of the shofar. All the commentaries understand Zacharim to be referring not to the male ibex, but to a sheep, a ram's horn that is really, 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 really curved. And then it says, Upihen mitubak kesef, and its opening is covered with silver, right? So this horn that's being blown, this shofar that's being blown. Ushtei chatzitrot be'emsa, and the two silver trumpets are now in the middle. V'shofar mekatzer v'chatzitzot marichot. And the shofar is a shorter blast, and the silver trumpets are a longer one, right? You see that the language is exactly the same as Mishnah Gimel. Shemitzvah tayom b'chatzotrot, because the mitzvah of the day on a fast is really with a trumpet. I think looking at the text in, that I read you in Sefer Bamidbar, that when you're in a time of trouble, like in a time of war, time of need, you use the Chatzotra to call out to the divine. You use the Chatzotra to call out to the divine. Okay. And here too, though, it's the ritual in the temple, and the imagery clearly is of something more humbled and more bent of this type of shofar, but the shofar is secondary to the chatzotrot. There's something problematic in the pshat here of like, is there only one shofar? Are there two shofars, right? If the chatzotra is in the middle, it sounds like there are two on either side, but then it only mentions one shofar. There's a little bit of confusion of what exactly this ritual looked like. All right. I was going to read Mishnah Hay as well, but I'm worried about the time because I don't want this to go too long. And so I'm gonna push Mishnah Hay till next time, and we'll do it next time. And we'll continue to see the third thing, the third holiday or event or time period in which the shofar is blown. And then we'll try to unpack what's being said here about shofar.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty. And thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning. And visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.